Samanta chakkhavalesu atra gacchantu devata saddhammam muni rajasa sunantu sagamokhadam dhamma savana kalo ayam badanda dhamma savana kalo ayam badanda dhamma savana kalo ayam badanda namo tassa bhagavato arahato samaha sambuddhassa namo tassa bhagavato arahato samaha sambuddhassa namo tassa bhagavato arahato samaha sambuddhassa. Okay, so today I would like to continue what I have stopped yesterday. Contemplated cause and effect and impermanence. Okay, so the Buddha, let me repeat. The Buddha further said, after Buddha instructed the yogi to apply mindfulness, to aware whatever mental state that arise at that moment and see it just a mental state, just like the mind affected by craving as a mind affected by craving. And when mind is not affected, also you must know. If you do not know the mind is not affected by craving, you think that craving is permanent all the time. So when the craving is no more there, you also must know. Then later on, Buddha further said, or else he advised contemplating in mind is arising factors. As I said before, arising factors consist of two things. One is condition. What caused that mental state to arise? And also the arising itself. As Buddha's teaching is concerned with cause and causal relationship, so whatever state that arises must have its causes. So we try to investigate the condition for the arising of that particular mental state. So for example, let us take mind affected by craving as mind affected by craving. So when that mind arises, that your mind is affected by craving, then you investigate what caused this craving to arise. For example, the eye. When the eye come to delicious food, when we enter into kitchen, the eye come to contact with delicious food, the food you like most, not the food you don't like. Your eye will just look at the food you like most. Then at that moment, even though the food has not yet touched your tongue, then due to pleasant eye contact, then craving has arisen, even though the food has not yet touched your tongue. Then at that moment, you go back to your mind and contemplate mind affected by craving as mind affected by craving. If one contemplation it has gone, the craving mind has gone, you also must know it has vanished. It had vanished. Otherwise, you think it is still there. Usually, one contemplation, it vanishes. Why? Why one contemplation, it has gone? For what reason?
Because two thought moments can exist at the same time.
Yes, because you already arouse wisdom. You already arouse mindfulness to see it as a mind affected by craving. At that moment, that craving has gone already. It cannot arise together with mindfulness. Not possible. So with that confidence, if you don't lack of confidence, you can check a little bit. Go back and check whether it's still there or not. If you found that it's still there, then don't be deluded thinking it's the same craving. It's another craving, not the same one. Once you know already, once you're aware of that craving mind, it has passed away. But when you go back to check it again, if you still, you find it's still there, tell yourself it's not the same one. Nah? The old one has gone. This may be the new one. Due to your thinking or due to old perception that still linger in your mind. It's the old one, not the new one. Okay. Then further you investigate why that craving mind arises in you. So through your investigation, then you know it's because of contact. Previously, when you enter into kitchen, you walk mindfully, there's no craving. But the moment the eye comes to contact with the delicious food you like, immediately craving arises. So previously there's no. On account of what it arises. You investigate yourself. It's easy to very easy to find out the cause. Then you contemplate, oh, this is the cause. Arising of craving is the effect. This is the cause. Arising of craving is the effect. Similarly, when you are drinking coffee, let's say you are drinking coffee in the coffee shop, talking very joyfully with your friend, and suddenly your enemy enter into the coffee shop and start to abuse you. So previously you are enjoying coffee. Now that pleasant feeling gone. When that abusive word come to that abusive word impinge your ear sensitivity, then unpleasant feeling arise followed by aversion. Aversion, irritating mind. So at that moment, you must not irritating mind. For those who have no mindfulness, then they fight back immediately. Right? They fight back with the enemy almost spontaneously because he doesn't know how to practice mindfulness. He doesn't know how to see that irritating mind as a conditional phenomena because of abusive word that come to contact with the ear. So if he has mindfulness, first he note, okay, mind affected by anger as mind affected by anger. Then he further find out why this anger might arise. Previously, I don't have anger, right? I enjoy my coffee. Why suddenly the mental state changed so fast? Oh, because there are some causes. What's the cause? That abusive word is the cause. That abusive words come to contact with the ear, owing to contact, dependent on contact, then aversion arises. So you see the cause, you see the effect. When you see the cause, you see the effect, then you will not identify that aversion as myself. Because it's cause and relation. So you will not identify that aversion as myself, then you will see that state is conditional phenomena as conditional phenomena. As Venerable Sariputta teach 5 ways of contemplation, one way is see it as a conditional phenomena. So you note it, conditional phenomena, as conditional phenomena. As you note like that, will the anger continue or stop? Continue or stop? Stop. Because at that moment, you have that wisdom to see the cause and effect. So when wisdom arises, ignorance must give way. This is the must. Right? When you see as a cause and condition phenomena, it's a wisdom. So when wisdom arises, ignorance that think aversion is myself must be given way. Just like when light arises, darkness give way. Same thing. Therefore, I tell you, one nothing enough to see it vanishes. It's just that you don't have confidence. So if you don't have confidence, you go back and check a little bit whether it's still there or not. If it's still there, no, it doesn't matter. It's a new one. Then keep on contemplate mind affected by aversion as mind affected by aversion. Then stop again, check again. If it's still there, then keep on. Until you become so familiar with this practice, one more thing you know is no more there. You don't have to go back and check. Okay? So on this 2 account, what are the causes for that, for certain mental state to arise? Contact, right? One is eye contact, another one is ear contact. Okay. Contact is one of the causes. And even the tongue, the dish, delicious food come to contact with the tongue. Craving also arise. Sometimes it's so fast, you just don't know. Only bite, few bite only you realize, oh my goodness, I forgot to note. Then you start to note, start to see your craving. Okay. And for body also, for the nose also. For when the smell come to contact with nose, then some reaction of the mind will arise in you. What reaction, it depends on, you know, how you perceive that things. So whatever arises in you, you just know. Same as body and mind. So all this state of mind arise due to what? What is the causes? Contact. Contact. Therefore, Buddha said contact is one of the four nutriments that sustain the life. And this contact, Buddha compared this contact like a cow without protective skin. Flay cow. A cow without protective skin, wherever the cow goes, the creatures, the insect will bite him, right? Wherever he stand, lie down, or lean on the wall, the insect will bite him constantly. Why? Simply because he has no skin. That skin is what? Compared with the yogis, what is that?
Mindfulness.
Yes, mindfulness. Who say? You, Donata, you say? So, that protective skin is mindfulness. Cow has no mindfulness. Therefore, we cannot blame him. We cannot understand the Dharma. We human beings, after listening to Dharma for so many times, we need that protective skin. We don't want to behave like flay cow. Right? Therefore, this contact, Buddha compared it as a cow without protective skin. So when you have no mindfulness, wherever you stand, you sleep, you walk, you lie down, you are bitten, you are attacked by defilements. Defilements of greed, defilement of delusion. If you identify it is myself, then you are attacked by, you are bitten by defilements of ignorance or delusion. When you get angry, then you are bitten by defilement of anger. Therefore, we need that protective skin. Okay? And since our senses are open all the time, right? Only when we fall asleep, then our senses are closed. So since our senses are open all the time, so the contact is there all the time. Contact, you know, from the eyes, from the ear, from the nose, from the tongue, from the body, sometimes so many contacts, the mindfulness just cannot follow. Therefore, choose one. Don't challenge yourself, okay? Choose one to contemplate. You want to see the six together, you make yourself tired. So choose one, at least your mind anchor on one object, then other defilement will not easy to come into your senses due to contact. Choose one to contemplate. Let's say you want to choose I. Then try, look at something, immediately check your mind. What state of mind arises in you? Or you choose ear, or you choose touch, or you choose mind, mental state. If nothing happens, then go back to your breath. Protect yourself. Protect yourself by applying your mindfulness on the breath. You are protected if you apply your mindfulness on the breath. Only occasionally, the mind loses its mindfulness. No more on the breath. Then the sense, the impingement comes. Contact comes. Then the mind is, the defilement arises in you. Then at a time, try to contemplate your mind. Okay? So for these few cases, we know contact is the cause. But sometimes perception also can be the cause for arising of greed, perception. Contact comes together with perception. For example, I want to relate one of my experiences. Many years ago, when I was in New Jersey, one of the devotees, American devotees, alternate day, she came to bring me dana, the food. And one day, she brought blueberry pie. Blueberry pie. And when I tasted, when the blueberry pie touches my tongue, it's so delicious that I immediately lost my mindfulness. I'm not mindful of that moment of tongue contact. And because I'm not mindful, then even I'm mindful, even though I'm mindful, the pleasant feeling still arises. Because it's the nature. Pleasant contact causes pleasant feeling. And I am not mindful of that pleasant feeling. Because I'm not mindful of that pleasant feeling, then craving arises. And even craving arises, I'm still not mindful. The mind is affected by craving as the mind affected by craving. And because I do not mindful of that state of mind, then I forgot to mark, I forgot to contemplate impermanence of that craving. Right? So I forgot to contemplate the impermanence of that craving state of mind, then that craving become permanent in me. The craving become permanent in me. So second day when she come again, I say, where is the pie? Today you didn't bring the pie. The mind still linger on that pie because I forgot to note impermanent of that craving. Therefore, it's very important to make a mark, to note impermanent. If at that moment I note impermanent of my craving, then it leaves a mark of impermanent, the perception of impermanent in my mind. So next time if I saw that pie again, I will not trigger the old craving. But because I forgot to note impermanent, that craving become permanent. It leave a mark of perception of permanent in my heart. Not only that. So another day she knows I like pie. So finally she said, okay, I brought another day. So she brought the pie. So when I eat the pie at the time, I can see immediately my mind fall back to the old perception of permanent. Right? Where I remember last time when I eat the pie, it's so pleasant. So the mind immediately fall back to the old perception of permanent. Instead of mindful of the present moment, the new feeling arises based on a tongue contact. Instead of mindful of the present moment, I saw my mind fall back to the old perception of permanent of that craving or that permanent of pleasant feeling. And as I bite the pie, I cannot feel the same feeling I have before when I first time taste the pie. So the mind get very irritated. The mind start to get very irritated because I keep wanting the old pleasant feeling to come back. I want to taste the same old pleasant feeling. And now I cannot get it because it has already gone. Of course I cannot get it, right? But the time the mind is cheated, deceived by that old perception of pleasant feeling. So the mind keep on fall back to the past and cannot find the same pleasant feeling I want, and the mind become irritating. Finally, I realized, my goodness, I'm not mindful of the pleasant taste. My mind just fall back to the past pleasant, permanent and pleasant feeling, because I perceive it as permanent. So I keep on looking for the past pleasant one. I forgot that it's already passed. So in this case, the old perception can cause craving to arise. Not only contact, the old perception, because the old perception, whatever we see, we hear, we taste, we smell, and we touch, and we think, if we do not mark it as impermanence, if we do not mark it as impermanent, and our perception must be permanent. There's only two things, permanent or impermanent. So then you mark it as a permanent, then this leave a mark in your perception, it's permanent. And next time, whatever you see again, you think it's permanent. Sometimes you want the old permanent pleasant feeling to come back. And you cannot get it, the mind get very irritating. So from here you can see how cause and effect work. How the perception of permanent cheat us. Therefore, after we discerned cause and effect of the arising mental state, or arisen mental state, we further contemplate that mental state as impermanent. Without noting that impermanent, what will happen?
We get disappointed when it doesn't arise again.
If we do not contemplate impermanent, the mind is occupied, obsessed by perception of permanent. It's sure. Unless you see it passes away, otherwise you will think it's lasting, it's permanent. Therefore, so sometimes when you are more mindful of your mental state, you see many cause and effect working. Some people, when they eat irritating, also they don't know why irritating. They cannot trace what are the causes that make the mind become irritated, right? Because he's not alert. The mindfulness is not alert, not fast to know, to see what's happening. Okay? So, whatever you see, you hear, or whatever mental state that arises, after you apply mindfulness and after you discern conditionality, you further apply not impermanent. When you do not pay attention to impermanent, that phenomena seems lasting. Just like I do not note my pleasant feeling as impermanent when I first taste the pie. And I do not pay attention to impermanent of my pleasant feeling, and that pleasant feeling lasts for many days. Until finally I was awakened. Right? Therefore, it's very important to note whatever mental state that arisen in you, note, contemplate impermanent. Even though you contemplate impermanent and you do not see it passes away, it's still there. Don't be cheated by it. If it's still there, it's not the old one. It's the new one. Try to see the old one has gone, the new one arise again. Don't think as the old one. Okay? If you think it as the old one, then it's a perception of permanent. So try to note impermanent. Even though you cannot see it precisely passes away, by contemplate impermanent, it leaves a mark of impermanent in your mental stream. Next time when you recall again, that perception of impermanent will help you to understand this phenomenon is impermanent. Okay, so another example I would like to quote is from one of my students. Whenever I tell students to note impermanent, many of my students resist to listen to me. Resist to listen to my instruction. Why is it? Like reciting. Impermanent, just like reciting, no, not for me. So they resist, including Ben. Okay. Later on, we ask him to share his experience. Okay. So this one of my students, she is my editor of my English book. And since she's my editor, she has read many of my books. And she knows I teach impermanent, but she never put into practice. She feels like reciting. Then my final book, Inner Exploration, I stress again the importance and the benefit of contemplating impermanent. Then this time she said, let my mind be open. Let me try. Don't resist. And she tried. So when she meditated the time, she tried to contemplate impermanent. First, she still cannot see impermanent. Then she find out why. Oh, because too tense up. Eagerly to see also not correct. Attitude is not correct. You eager to see impermanent, your mind is become polluted. Right? With expectation, your mind is polluted. So she let go of that tension, let go of that expectation, then try to see whatever arises, she just contemplate impermanent, calmly, you know, peacefully. So one day when she contemplate impermanent, the phenomena suddenly arise and pass away like a torrent of river. Like a torrent of river arising and passing away very, very fast. And she was very shocked. You know, a lot of fear arise. A fear of losing the self again. A lot of fear arise because all phenomena cannot be controlled by him, by her. So a lot of fear arise then later on. And this phenomena lasts for a few days for her. Then finally she feels that she needs to write to me to ask for confirmation, to ask for consultation and so on. And she told me one thing. She told me why she can see the fast arising and passing away because she contemplates impermanent. Previously, for so many years, she practiced, she never contemplated impermanence. Just watch the object like that. Never incline her mind to see impermanent. Therefore, she never see. But after she let go of her resistance, just follow what teacher say, and the Dhamma unfold itself very fast. So, if you don't incline your mind to see impermanence, then the phenomena is concealed by appearance of continuity or compactness of continuity. Just like the perception, when I do not see my pleasant feeling as permanent, I do not see my pleasant feeling as impermanent, I was cheated by it as permanent. So I keep on looking, keep on wanting the old feeling to come back. Then the phenomena is concealed by continuity for many days. Okay. So now we want to invite Ben to share. Ben has been following me for many years. And he listened many times I teach impermanent, but he never followed. For many, many years. Finally, he break through. So please share your experience.
I resisted. I guess I resisted mainly just for one is it seems very mechanical. Just saying the word impermanence. And then the other is, I think I was expecting, this kind of profound Dhamma, how could it be so simple? Like I was expecting you have to emerge from jhana or something to perceive it. So I think I just didn't think there was, it kind of seems so simple, but I guess when I tried it, it's finally after many years, as I said, it actually works.
How it works? You see
it's
your mind.
Like in your book.
No. You tell your experience. In Michigan.
It's really as simple as when you note the thing arise and then you just say vanishing, and then you check the next moment it's actually already not there. Mm-hmm. And once it gets confirmed many times, then it becomes automatic.
What do you mean it becomes automatic?
When you check it's not there, and then the next time it comes again, when you check it's not there anymore again, and the next time you check it's again, then you kind of know that it's mm-hmm. it actually works.
Mm-hmm. But now you don't have to check already, right?
Right.
Mm. If you have to check, mean for initial, you have to check to give you confidence. But now, having seen so many impermanent, you don't have to check already. You know one noting, it has gone. This progress, right?
Is it of a thought, or what are you noting?
Just like what the sutta is saying, any either mind affected by craving is mind affected by craving, or any kind of distraction.
But can I ask, if it's, do you use the precise language that Lord Buddha used in the sutta, or is it okay to...
It's no language, you just, when you notice arising, you just, initially I just say vanishing, 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 and then I check after 3 times, is it still there, it's actually not there anymore. Then you check, I guess, actually, maybe after 1 vanishing, then you, next time you don't need to say vanishing anymore, you check, it's already not there.
But I mean, like, in terms of the language that was used in the sutta, in the Satipatthana Sutta,
mind affected by lust,
mind affected by hatred, mind affected by delusion. Do you have to use that precise language, or if, the mind is affected
whatever,
by frustration or
whatever
irritation?
Whatever applies to that, you know, to you.
It's okay.
Yeah.
Thank you so much for telling me. I have like a same kind of resistance to
from your last retreat, Michigan retreat, I know already.
Resistance to noting itself, like as you said, it's too simple to, you know, and it has to be, when I get to like a more subtle, like a, you know, jhana state, then I will do kind of thought. Kind
same
of,
like him.
So, exactly, I mean, thank you so much. Now my question is, do you do arising, or vanishing, or just
so
vanishing?
Arising actually was my recent discovery, but that's a separate story. The vanishing, I think, is to me especially helpful in actually during. Okay, so another thing I was resisting is because I figured that I'm here for samatha meditation. I want to, you know, get into this deeper concentration, jhana state, why she keeps on talking about it. So that's part of the resistance. So then
it's very discouraging for me.
Now finally I'm a little bit better at concentration as she shifts into then I actually discovered it's actually a huge help to some meditation as well, because previously when I get into subtle breath, I always have this not anxiety, but I always wanted to say, oh, now I'm already so calm, how come, you know, stuff hasn't come yet? And I have this kind of expectation. So I think that's actually preventing further progress. So finally, once she and once I accepted the technique, whenever the mind, the expectation comes, I just noted, oh, the expectation arising, you know, vanishing, vanishing, vanishing. The next time I check, the expectation is not there anymore. So after 1 day, I'm already not bothered by the expecting mind at all. After like many years of kind of getting bothered by this thing, so that's why it's really as simple as. You should read that chapter, that Indian book. It says basically the, I think you can actually go very far with it, even if it sounds so simple.
What's the name of the book?
What's the name of the book?
I don't remember the name of the book.
Which book? My book?
it's impermanent. There is no book.
Now,
that book is the chapter in
Inner Exploration. It's in my website, you can go to my website. Very thin, no? Now Jonathan's level is very high, even no book. Jonathan can read the book without words. I think you can share a little bit the how you only see vanishing and not see arising. Maybe it's also helpful for them.
Okay.
Just now, because Sugi mention why no arising or only vanishing, right? You, Suki? Okay.
Okay, so I'm an annihilationist.
Annihilationist.
And I think I didn't realize it before. So mm-hmm. so at first I think Sally taught the Yamaka Sutta, so kind of showed the kind of realized I was I had an annihilation view, and then recently this that sutta she shared first in the first Dhamma mm-hmm. talk the.
Kachana Gota Sutta.
So whenever I read the, because I'm always thinking the defilement is arising, so I always want to note the vanishing. So whenever it says about arising, I don't pay attention to it because mm-hmm. I figured that when it arises, why should I care that the first part? Mm-hmm. So there's part in the sutta says. When you note the diverse source of arising of phenomena, including kama, ignorance, and craving, then there's no doubt that this the arising kind of will happen, and the non-existence doesn't exist. So I suddenly realized actually the if you note the arising and let's say you know something, the arising factor, they suddenly notice that you realize the five aggregates that we kind of cling on to so dearly is actually caused by this, could be some like trivial, trifle thing that arise, you know, 10 minutes ago, then all these mental phenomena gets generated. And previously you would think that this is myself because they're kind of clinging to this emotional state. But when you look at the arising, it's actually caused by, you know, extremely trifle thing, or could be like completely unrelated thing. So I think it makes you a little bit disenchanted with the self.
Disenchanted with self or phenomena? There's no self. It's phenomena. With the arising phenomena, disenchanted with the mm-hmm. constant arising phenomena, mm-hmm. right?
Right. But I think during the sitting, I noticed that the investigating the arising is too a little bit too complicated because maybe a chain, you kind of follow the chain, and mm-hmm. I think it. If you want to do the samatha, for me, I think the arising part is more complicated than the vanishing mm-hmm. during the sitting time, but during off the cushion, that was extremely helpful.
Can I ask a question? So is what you're describing similar to, let's say you're at the first morning sit, because I get there early, I've already started practicing, and I notice that when someone enters the room, you know, the energy shifts, and I can almost see a wave, a sequence of phenomena striking the mind, like somebody opens the door on the deck, and maybe their shoe squeaks or they open loudly or whatever. A wave of phenomena strikes the mind, you know, maybe anger arises, note anger, watching anger, you know, rise and pass, and then vanish because the person settles down or whatever, and then it's gone, note the vanishing. Then somebody else comes in and there's another wave, and so you can just watch the mind, you know, reacting in this. Is that what you're describing?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Basically, it's simpler for me. Like, basically, someone's shoe squeak makes my mind this way that I think it's myself. You know, it's actually mm-hmm. because someone's shoe squeak.
Yeah. What? I don't understand what. Say it again.
The mind that we cling on to so dearly that mm. you think is your kind of precious perception is arose because someone's shoe mm. squeaked when they get into the door.
Okay, Haddon, you can share.
I'm guessing most people are practicing the samatha. That's why you feel disturbed.
I don't feel disturbed.
The the way you describe when people enter, like a wave of things, you pay attention to them, or you are practicing vipassana?
I'm practicing vipassana at the time.
Oh, okay.
At the time when something happens,
okay.
Someone's foot hits the floor, the
okay.
Foot squeaks.
So,
I note.
Okay.
I note the sound, and I can feel the impact, the
okay.
Impingement
I
of
see.
The squeaking floor striking
okay.
The mind, and
okay.
The mind like waving into
okay.
This sort of flares up into this,
okay.
You know, anger or frustration
okay.
Or whatever.
Okay.
Noting the wave
okay.
Of frustration, noting, and then it just sort of peters
mm.
Out.
Mm.
Noting the vanishing, and
very
then somebody
good.
Else will come, or the person's walking down the hall, and with each step, the mind is
I see.
Waving and flaring up like, brr, it's me, I'm angry, whatever, but if you're noting it, it seems like it just, you can watch the flare and the different minds arising and passing, it's like...
Very good.
Okay.
Haran, you can share something.
Yeah, I saw you were practicing samatha, then I was to share a tip how to handle the disturbance.
No, other people may practice samatha. You can share, no problem.
Okay. So, I know almost impossible to have a zero noise, right? So either big bang or slight, all these things. So I found one anomaly is very helpful, which as you imagine if you hold a cup of water and you walk through the kitchen, and while it's very busy, not like us, very quiet, stand there. But if it's a very busy, like Starbucks, you have a almost full cup of coffee and you want to walk through, you from one end to the end of the room, like Zahane say, if you go back to your friends, right, at the other end of the room, and there are so many other people. So you have very full cup of coffee and you want to walk back to your friend, you don't want to spill it, right? But you want to watch it out, at the same time you don't want to bump up to other people. So assume this cup of water, the coffee is your samatha object, which either the breathing, I don't know if everybody is breathing, assume it's the breathing, it's the cup of coffee, and anything else, full room of people, anything else, it's all just background. It's all just background. So imagine, like, I don't know who play any instrument, right? You have two hands, right? You don't only handle one hand, there's one primary one, there's the background, the other hand, right? It's the piano or guitar, right? But this is just how to get this idea, which is, it's okay. Anything happen, you know, it's just background. Another example is if you watch TV, even though I don't watch TV now, we don't have a TV program, but I watched TV before, right? So assume there's a very good movie or show you're watching, right? And you're very into it. And there's a little cat walk across the room. You probably know, or if you concentrate enough, you may not even notice it. But it's just background. So if you integrate the environment, whatever environment you're in, even when you are doing walking meditation, it doesn't matter the ground is moving because you're moving, your mind tells you walk from here to there, either a short distance or long distance, fast or slow, doesn't matter. All these are just full room of people or somebody else. Your primary objects, continue to be this thing that's full, almost full cup of coffee. So you will carefully and just carry it away, because that is the very good show of whatever the reason to make you, you know, this is it. This is the only thing in my mind. Others in background, even you may not completely intentionally ignore it, just let it be, because you walk into an environment, it's just background. But this thing, from you wake up in the morning to the end of the day, you get back to, that's always your walking. In the morning, the first moment you wake up, is you start walking with a cup of coffee. To the end, it will be the end of the day, it will be get to your friend's table, then get you through the day.
Okay. I have a question. So when you're walking the water, you're kind of balancing it. Using an analogy, maybe adjusting it. Are you doing any adjustment when you're watching the breath, or you're just purely watching it?
That's balancing it. That's also background. You don't care. As long as you are aware, you're breathing is fine. Depends on where you are. Like at the beginning, you only want to know in and out, right?
Mm-hmm.
So that's good enough.
Yeah.
If you get to the second stage, you want to know the long or short, then as long as you are in that state.
Mm-hmm.
That's the second level. So maybe is basically the point is, as long as you are on the object, that's good enough.
Okay.
Does it answer your question?
Yeah. Thank you.
Michael, you want to?
Yes. I wanted to ask a question related directly to Trudy's original point about the people walking into the meditation hall and the effect it has. Now, when I'm practicing samatha, my mind produces enough distraction to handle anything, so I don't have to worry so much. But the point being, if, I guess the question is, can we look at what happened to you and what happens to all of us in one way or the other as an opportunity rather than a distraction? You move from samadhi and then something happens. You hear a bang. I hear a bang, a crash of a door. And if my concentration is at a particular point, then I can't really tell you whether that's inside of me or outside of me. So I kind of feel that there's an opportunity there as well as something to work on removing. Is that right or is that wrong?
Removing of what?
Well, for example, the idea of, oh, my samadhi has been interrupted, now I'm going. I have the feeling you might be suggesting that, Trudy, in your...
No suggestion.
No, not the idea that moving smoothly from samadhi, samatha to vipassana. You were saying that might be, I don't know how what to call it, a problem or an interference or just a change.
No, I'm just noticing. The mind, watching the mind, watching the mind change. That makes
sense. Yeah, that's what I thought. So, yeah, that's what I thought. There's something very beautiful about the transitions from one to the other I'm beginning to find.
Yes. Therefore, I teach mixture, right? It is so clean,
what?
Mixture.
Oh,
the concentration and insight. If you so, so clean to your concentration, each bang will cause anger to you. Then later on, if you do not know how to note your anger, you hate the person who banged it. Then worse, even worse, right? Therefore, when you bang, then your concentration is broken. Then concentrate your mind. when the concentration, when the anger arises, anger is hindrance, one of the hindrances, right? When you contemplate your mind, the mind affected by anger is mind affected. When it's gone, the mind peaceful again, go back to the breath. Isn't it very nice, you know? Very good. And it gives you a chance to see your mind even better. Otherwise, you thought, my concentration is very good. Ah, I achieved very deep concentration. When you go back home, one abusive word come to your ear. Wow, your temper, you know, you can see your anger flare out. Therefore, take this opportunity. Whatever that impinge to your mind that breaks your concentration, then look at the mind. This supplement each other, help each other. Insight helps concentration. Concentration helps you to aware of your mental state faster and faster. Without concentration, you cannot, your mindfulness cannot be so alert. Right? So mixture of both is beautiful practice. I always mix both. For example, sometimes, you know, I have strong pain and not become sensation, then I don't want to know pain, I just go back to the breath. Whatever I want to see, I can see. I don't have to see the back. I don't have to see one object and go into object, don't know how to come out. You know, some people, they go into pain, don't know how to come out. No. For me, I just can play around. You know? Even it's so painful, I just ignore it and come back to breath. And the pain does not disturb me anymore. If I want to go to pain, I go to pain. If I want to go to breath, I go to breath. So, and if you can, you know, master your mind, your meditation becomes much more interesting. And don't have to cling to the concentration so strongly. Okay? Okay, enough for today, 1 hour. And thank you for sharing. Huh? Thank you for all your sharing, your help other people to understand the Dharma more.
May I ask you one question to Hardy? So when I walk, I can keep my breath. Then some distraction comes, maybe a wind blows, I hear the tree make a sound, so I look, then I lost it. Or maybe I see someone, maybe I have to say something, then I lost it. So how can I keep it continuously?
Mm. Two cases, right? One is while you're walking in the wood, you can ignore it, like don't move your eyes or something. If you feel weird, you're not like polite enough to people, like since we're already together for a couple of days, you feel
not
like you
want not to... Not during meditation, just to say, let's say we're not in this situation. If I walk, I can think of my breathing. Then I see someone, I have to say something.
That's what I'm trying to
talk you don't about. Have to say something. Case. Just keep your mind on your breath. Don't have to say something. Everybody know we shouldn't talk.
Yes, I'm talking about outside of meditation. I sometimes still try to keep
That's the second case I'm trying to address. Second case, for example, right now I'm talking to you. If I decide to still continue work on my breath, this is still the full cup of coffee, even when I'm right now talking to you now. So you can, this is a little bit challenging, but you can practice. But eventually you will, even if you are not 100% like you're sitting, you're doing the normal work, like after this retreat, you'll go back to normal daily life. That's what I'm trying to address. I go to work as well. So in order to make it normal, you need to practice. Which even though when talking about, you can start from drill the hole. So if you cannot get at the beginning continuous, you start from like thought, right? Like why say one sentence? That's about several seconds left, right? Within this, like let's say 10 seconds talking. you don't want to make people notice you are weird, right? But you can like unnoticedly, because like Xiaowei said, our minds are really fast. One split of a second, you can think one thing, and second split of a second, you came back. Leverage that. While you are talking, because your speed is much slower than your mind speed, drill a few holes while you're talking. Try that. You set a minimum goal. In one sentence, only notice once, your breath. It's good enough. Because I'm engineer, I'm like on that side, so I have quantified things to mark if I'm making progress. So you can do similar thing, set any scale. So then if you can achieve one sentence, notice once, good. Next time, set when you're talking to someone or say hi to someone, make it your target as two. Notice twice your breath in one sentence. Just you can start any starting point you like, you feel comfortable. If you say one sentence, that's too much. Make it 10 sentence, right? So while you have 15 minutes talk while you're in a meeting, just make that goal at the starting point. Note it at least once. That's good enough. And no one will notice you. Right? Right? See, while you're laughing, you can still say that goal. While laughing, even though this laugh finish, you'll notice once. That's good enough. So slowly, if you set a goal, this 10 seconds, you can 3 times, 4 times, then you will notice you have a continuous two times together. Then the dotted line becomes dot dash line. Then, you know, you know how to set eventual goal. So I think, you know, we're all practitioners, so you can work that way, which is, I noticed some people make a practice diary, which is good. You mark it that any of this tip works for you, and any progress you made. I make notes as well, but I really go back to look at it. But the process you write it down probably help you, because that enhance what works for you and what will help you. Hope that helps.
Very helpful. I think very helpful for people.
Yes.
First case, that's what I talk about. Which ignore that anxiety.
No.
Or you take it as a background.
What? No. Then you want to ask a question to him?
No, I did. He already answered. He's
that was the
question about looking at the scenery.
While you're doing walking meditation, you can ignore it.
That's actually very helpful, because part of what I feel my problem is, like, either you do samatha or you do vipassana, I feel like going between the two conceptually is difficult, and I feel like, and I think you just gave me kind of the, which is, it sounds to me like for you the breath as your object is never far, and you've made it that way, like you make it that no matter how, what mental states you're observing as a vipassana practice, you have your mind at the breath as your, if you're not doing vipassana, you're doing the breath.
Mm.
Or if you're not thinking or talking, you're doing the breath. Is that what you're saying? Basically the
further, if you feel like you develop your concentration mindful enough, or even not, you can mix the vipassana as well. Because while you're walking, you can watch your mental state. Like while you're talking, then each word actually behind there's some mind. You can watch that as well.
Mm-hmm.
Same thing. Because samatha is easier, it's just one object. Vipassana, you have to continuously notice the stream, which your mind will be much faster, because your object is not breathing anymore. Breath is slow, right? your mind fast, but to meditate on the mind, to watch it arising and passing away, then your because the mind also fast, the object also fast, so you have to train yourself fast, like you can catch up. Your mindfulness can catch up with your mind's changing, that arising and passing away. Then you just continue to watch the flow. Which same thing, you can start with just watch a little bit, like a one catch, one snapshot of arising and passing away. Then your goal finish, then you feel like you achieve something today. Like Steve said, I did it. Yeah, for the moment, it's not perfect. It's okay, right? So that makes my day. So give yourself some confidence. Tomorrow, set a goal, twice. two snapshots of arising and passing away, either mind or your feeling or anything, right? All these five aggregates. We are never lack of objects to work on. So it's all available to us, so why waste it?
Okay, enough for today. If you think, you know, students sharing are helpful, I can give more time for them to share. No problem. Okay, so I know you finished my talk. We continue tomorrow. Okay.